Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. I'm in Quebec this week, and I can't wait to tell you about this adventure here. But for now, I want to rebroadcast a program that I had with Stéphane Groulot and Megan Kelly. And they do a special kind of farming called veganics, and they happen to live in Quebec. So I thought I would air that program this week, and next week I'll tell you more about everything that happened here this week in Quebec. So we'll get a flavor for some changes that have happened in this area with regard to being vegan. Okay, here is my interview with Stéphane Groulot and Megan Kelly.
I'm really looking forward to today's show. We're going to talk about something you don't hear about very often, and that is veganic farming or veganic agriculture. And what is that? Well, we're going to get into detail about that in a moment with my guests. But basically, at least my understanding is, using fertilizers or farming and gardening that is free from animal byproducts. And a lot of people think that we need to fertilize the soil with manure from animals. And we're going to talk about to some people who are doing something quite different and why they're doing it. My guests today are Stéphane Groulot and Megan Kelly, and they founded the Veganic Agriculture Network in 2008 to promote farming and gardening that is free from chemicals and animal byproducts. They have a website, goveganic.net. That's G-O-V as in Victor, E, G as in George, A, N as in Nancy, I, C.net. And it features profiles of veganic farms in North America and introduces people to the main concepts of farming and gardening in a way that is environmentally sustainable and compatible with a vegan ethic. In 2004, Stéphane visited veganic farms in Europe for 9 months and began the website www.vegiculture.net, that's V-E-G-E, culture.net, to promote veganic agriculture in the French language. He has a diploma in organic agriculture from the CEGEP de Victoriaville and is a frequent writer for the magazines BioBoule and Growing Green International. Stéphane and Megan both garden veganically in the village of Saint-Casimir, Quebec. And are they with us?
Yes, we are.
Oh, there you are. Hello, bonjour.
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 So you're both in Canada right now.
We're both in Quebec. So Stéphane grew up here in Quebec, and I grew up in Ontario and moved here a few years ago.
Lovely. Well, I'm really glad that you that this worked out for both of us schedule-wise, mm-hmm. that you could be on the show today, and I can't wait to hear about what you do and why you do it.
Thanks.
Okay, so I always like to do this with my guests and find out how they got on the vegetarian path. Maybe each of you can share a little bit of your own stories.
Sure, Stéphane, I'll let you go first.
Yes, it's been maybe almost 12 years now that I've got aware of the possibility of being vegetarian. At first, I was taking yoga classes and meditation class, and the teacher said at one point that maybe if you give up meat and you go vegetarian, it's easier to meditate and to be more aware of what's happening in our body. And so I just said the word once, and it kind of, oh, I never thought about that. And so I started to read and experiment with cooking, and then it was after a few months and meeting some other people, I became vegetarian, and then a few years later, I became vegan.
How old were you when this started?
I was 21.
Right. And how popular is it in the Quebec community, vegetarianism?
This is not quite popular, because I would say most of the information we have about vegetarianism is in English, and that's in many in Quebec provinces. There is not much people that understand English in the countryside. Maybe in Montreal, in big towns, there are lots of people that understand English, and we see that there is much more vegetarians and vegans there. But in the countryside, or where it's more French-speaking people, their vegetarianism is quite scarce, and that's why we are working on veganic. But personally, I'm also quite involved in vegetarian issue and veganism, and as Megan too is also involved in trying to bring these ideas in the people, and especially sometimes I'm trying to translate stuff so that people can understand what are the ideas.
Right, this is great. I'm just particularly curious about the culture because I spent 4 years living in the south of France, and culturally I know it's next to impossible for people to be vegetarian there, and I was, it isn't impossible. I was a vegan there, and I lived there for 4 years, but I never met another vegetarian, and when I heard about the Veggie Pride Parade in Paris, yeah. I think it started at around 2002, I was so surprised because it was like they were coming out of the closet.
Yeah, I know.
So I wonder if it's any different in Quebec, if the culture is similar food-wise.
Yeah, the culture is similar, but I would say it's a bit different. It's true that in France there is a really strong tradition of food and meat, and it's even stronger than here in Quebec. So in France, I would say that there is more opposition to vegetarianism. So these groups that are setting Veggie Pride and all these initiatives in veganism and vegetarianism have to be strong and kind of a bit more fighting a strong tradition.
Right.
Or here in Quebec, I would say it's more open-minded, but it's still really... Meat is also really present everywhere, and we have also different meals that are traditional and are meant to be with meat. But I see that there is, I think that it's less strong, and I see that people, when they get aware of that it's possible to be vegetarian and vegan, there is a bit more maybe open interest than maybe in France.
And one thing that's actually nice here in Quebec is there are quite a few vegetarian food companies here in Quebec. There's one called Commensal that you can even go into, you know, a grocery store in a tiny city in the countryside and find vegetarian foods available in the supermarkets. And even some of the traditional Quebecois foods like veggie pâté and meat pie, they actually have made vegan versions of those foods. So I've been very happy to see that here.
And when did you get started on this path, Megan?
I think when I was about 11, I told my parents that I was going to stop eating mammals, and I think at that time I had more than anything a connection with my dog. But it was really more when I was 19 or so that I seriously began looking at, you know, the factory farm conditions for all animals, because when I was a teenager I sort of called myself a vegetarian, but I still ate chicken, I still ate fish, I would go through phases where I would stop for a while, but I didn't have a very diversified diet at that point in my life.
You were eating the feathered vegetable and the scaly vegetable.
Exactly. And then I think it was when I was, after my first year of university, I was just at a point where I felt like I had enough foods in my diet. You know, I had sort of learned about, lentils and whole grains, and I had started really incorporating those in my diet already. And so when I felt like I was, in a sense, ready to, that's when I did all the research about factory farming. And so in one summer, I went from being sort of one of these half vegetarians to being quite a devout vegan.
Okay, well, it's all good. And you know, you have, I don't know if I'm reading into it, but we don't have to apologize for not being completely vegan, for being half whatever. I'm always encouraging people to reduce the amount of animal products, and the world would be a much better place if it wasn't. I'm not expecting it to be completely vegetarian, but it would be great if people really were consuming a lot less animals and dairy.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, so tell me, what is veganic agriculture?
Well, veganic agriculture, it's essentially going one step further than organic. So with conventional agriculture, it's essentially based on chemical fertilizers and chemical pesticides. With organic, they take out those chemical elements and they replace them with fertilizers of organic sources. But unfortunately, some of the most readily available fertilizers of organic origin are manure, blood meal, bone meal, fish emulsion, feather meal. So with Veganic, we go a step further where we still keep the organic standards, but we eliminate those animal products.
Now, when it's organic, not veganic, but organic, and they use manure from animals, can those animals come from non-organic sources?
Yes, they can, and they certainly most frequently do. And so that's one of the concerns, too, for people who are eating organic as a way of reducing their exposure to chemicals.
Right.
The manure that's being put on the fields may have antibiotics, it may have pesticides.
In concentrated forms, too.
Yep.
Something.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing that's quite interesting is there was a study that was done by the University of Minnesota that showed that if there are antibiotics in the feces, that the antibiotics can actually be uptaken by the plants.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
this is the
lovely.
Type of thing that we're quite concerned about in terms of possible contaminants.
Okay, so I'm not very happy right now. I do try and eat mostly organic, and eating veganic is, I think, where I would like to go and where all of us should go. So,
yeah, especially from a vegan or vegetarian point of view, where we try to avoid exploiting animal and buying product that might come from animal or from factory farms. So if we use byproducts from these industries, we are kind of financing this industry, even if we don't eat the product or the meat or the dairy product. So that's why we came out with this this interest in veganic, because we, as vegans, we were trying to see where are the problems or what we should work on. And in the ultimate, if we really want to have a vegan lifestyle, we kind of need to stop depending on that industry that is factory farm and agribusiness.
Now, do you know if, let's just say, if I was a small farmer and I had animals on my property for whatever reason, milk, eggs, meat, or nothing, and I use their manure on my crops, would that be okay if they, even if they didn't consume any antibiotics or if they were living really naturally?
It depends what we want. It's sure that I would say that it's better to use manure on the field instead of wasting it in the river or losing it, but we could not call it veganic because it's not the point with veganic is to really try to avoid exploiting or using animals. So we really try to promote alternative or plant-based way of growing food instead of relying on animal input.
Okay, let me be a devil's advocate just for a minute. And I'm on your side. I'm not against what you're doing. I love what you're doing. But I want to try to think of questions that people would naturally think of. I remember reading a story, and I can't remember what country it was, but it was a small country, third world, that had some serious hunger and food distribution problems. And one of the things that they ended up doing was coming up with these containments for human waste. And then that human waste became compost that they were able to put on their crops. And it composted to a form where it was totally clean. And now the area, God, I wish I can remember where it was, but it's thriving and they're growing a lot more food and it's a nice circular form of renewing and sustainability. Do you know anything about that, and do you have any thoughts about using human waste? Would that be veganic?
Yeah, I mean, with veganic, there's different definitions that different people would use for it, and some of them would include human waste and some of them wouldn't. So some of the definitions would involve just fertilizing strictly with plant-based products and with rock powders. And then other definitions would be a bit larger to include human waste because it's waste that's being produced by, you know, free-living animals. And, I mean, even when we talk about veganic gardening, we're not talking about an absence of animal waste because mm-hmm. or animal feces, because it is there from free-living animals, from the microorganisms that are in the soil, from the worms that are in the soil. So that component still is present, and adding human waste could be a part of that, too. More than anything, it's trying to get away from situations where animals are being exploited and using the waste of, you know, from factory farms and slaughterhouses.
And for the human waste, from a sustainable point of view, it's sure that at presently when we all the human waste are going into sewage and we kind of lose it, and in a sense we are kind of depleting our soil with the nutrients that we kind of let go away. So to complete the cycle and to really reuse all the waste, that would complete the cycle of nutrients if we would put them back in the soil. But it's sure that the organic certification or all the organic standards are presently opposed to using human waste. So that's also why the farms that are certified stock-free or people that want to be certified stock-free or veganic, they cannot use human waste because there is concerns and it's not allowed by the certification.
Okay.
But some gardeners would use them because there is more and more books and research that have been made that if it is really well composted, it could be safe to use them on the land.
Right.
And people can go online if they're interested in learning more about humanure. There's a book online called The Humanure Handbook, which can be downloaded for free.
I love the internet. Everything is there. Huh. Well, that's good to know. So when I think about fertilizing a garden, I think of bone meal. And what do you use in veganic agriculture? What would be the replacement for that?
The first thing I would when I do talk is to change our view of fertilizing the soil. And this come from, in fact, the farmers I met in Europe, where they were saying the first thing should be to avoid losing the nutrients that are in the soil before trying to bring back some nutrients. So often it's the way we grow food that we deplete the soil. Or, for example, if we have a bare soil all the winter long, there will be lots of erosion, there will be lots of leakage. So the nutrients that are in the soil, we lose them. So then, for sure, we have to replace them by bringing in much more fertilizer. So the first practice we would recommend would be to have something that covers the soil. It can be plants that are growing there so that they will collect the nutrients with their roots. Or we can also have mulch, where it's an organic material that we put over the soil, so it will protect from erosion and so it will protect from water, and it will just keep the soil covered, so it will prevent losing the nutrients.
You know, I love that. I love that approach. It's similar to when we talk about healthcare. It's better to prevent the disease rather than treat the disease.
So, exactly.
And my father has an expression, and I'm thinking of it now, where he says, "If you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem."
Yeah.
And so you're preventing, to some degree, the soil losing its nutrients. Great.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's sure that the question is always there, where do you get your nutrients? It might be similar to people that ask, where do you get your proteins? So if we kind of protect the soil, then to get the protein, the nutrients, we can get a lot of the nutrients directly in the soil or in the surrounding. For example, if we keep our food scrap, or if we keep the grass clipping or tree leaves, these are all organic material that contain nutrients. So then we can use them for mulch or to make compost.
Mm.
But also we can create new nutrients just by planting legumes. It can be legume crops that we harvest, or it can be green manure, so that these are plants that we grow in the garden or in the field. So the legumes have the ability to take the nitrogen that is in the air with their roots, and they will kind of put them in their body, or the plants will kind of keep them, and when we bury the plant, it will release the nitrogen that has been collected in the air. So we can, most of the nutrients that we need in the garden can be produced or kept on site. And then if we really need to bring back some other things, like maybe magnesium or sulfur, or then we can add or have use some complementary product. It can be kelp meal, or it can be alfalfa meal or soybean meal. It can be other things like that. But there's much more things that we can grow or get on site before trying to purchase some fertilizer.
Right. Well, that's fascinating. It all goes back to nature, actually, which has been fine-tuning what's going on the Earth for millions of years. Mm-hmm. And got it all figured out, and then in a mere few hundred years, we're trying to deconstruct everything.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of magic going on where we can take nutrients from the air and put it in the soil just through plants.
Yes. The same thing for potash, for example, or potassium, where if there is maybe about 50% of clay in the soil, and if the soil is really alive, so there is lots of microorganisms and plants, then this activity in the soil can degrade the rocks and the clay particle and release potassium or potash in the soil so that we will have some more for the plants. So if we have a really alive soil, we also contribute to creating new soil by degrading rocks and all the material that is in the soil.
Now, you mentioned you went to Europe and you studied with veganic farms there. What got the veganic farm started over there?
Sorry, what the...
You've studied in Europe about veganic agriculture, and I wondered what got the veganic farm started in Europe? Was it cow disease or something like that?
No, it's been longer than that. In fact, there is kind of two things that happened in Europe. There was vegans that were into peace movement and they were trying to have a more sustainable lifestyle. And they realized that to be really completely vegan and to have more sustainable lifestyle, we need to grow food that is veganic. So they started a small network and they tried to bring these ideas around. And they discovered that there was already some farms that were growing veganically, like Ian Tolhurst, that I stayed with. And these farmers were not necessarily vegan or vegetarian, but they were trying to grow food with less, with no chemicals, less dependency on petrol, so they just came out with the idea of growing food with green manures and plant-based material, because this is what has the less impact on the environment. So for some farmers, they just came to veganic by thinking about how we grow and the impact on the environment.
Can you tell me what countries some of these farms are in? You said Europe, but I'm just curious.
Yes. In England, this is the main place where there are farms that are even certified organic, and there is this big network there. So in England, in Germany, in Austria, there are farms, in France.
Hmm.
So these are the main places I've learned about farms. But there is other places or gardens, also many places like New Zealand, in Australia, in many places around the world, and we are trying to get in contact with more farms also.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I can see where there would be some difficulty in getting this to happen because of factory farming, and that there is an overabundance of manure available, and we can't spread it over the earth enough. There's just too much of it around, and so there would be some resistance to going veganic.
In Austria, for example, a few years ago, they evaluated that there was maybe about 1,000 farms that were not using manure because they didn't have access to manure, so people were trying to... They were growing food with other techniques like green manure or plant-based compost. So depending on the area, maybe here in North America we have lots of manure, lots of farms, but in other countries they don't necessarily have manure accessible, or even in Canada, in Quebec here, I know farmers that are trying to get away from manure because they have to transport it on long distance, and it's still quite sometimes expensive. So there is this idea of, okay, maybe we should try to find other ways. And in England, for example, or in, I think mostly right in Europe, they have the regulation where farmers need to grow at least 50% of the fertility on site, so they cannot buy in all the manure. So if they need to grow or to get at least 50% on the site, they are in a dilemma or of having animals to get manure or to find new other techniques than using animals and become to green manure as a way of producing fertility directly on site.
I think everything you're saying supports the trend, hopeful trend, of moving away from giant agribusiness and factory farming, even the growing of plants in a factory form is devastating.
Yeah.
And it's better if we have lots of small farms spread around so that we have access to food and we don't have the hit of high shipping costs and everything.
Yes.
So you're growing veganically. Now my next question is, what's the quality of food like? What's the nutrient density of the food you're growing?
Well, I can say, at least from a taste test, that everyone agrees that Stefan's strawberries are the best tasting strawberries around. We just harvested about 25 pounds of them yesterday. Have you done soil tests, Stefan, directly?
No, not really, not yet. In fact, what I would say is to get the best plants, we need the plants to get all the nutrients they need and at a certain rate, and because we know that plants in a good ecosystem, they would interact with the soil to get exactly what they need when they need it. About 25% of what the plants produce, or the sugar that are produced in the leaves, are excreted by the roots to feed the microorganisms, and the plants can change what they excrete to activate more a kind of microorganism. So if they produce more of one kind, then they will eat more of that. So there is this interaction, but if we have a really good soil, then the plants are more likely to get everything they need at the speed they need to produce the best plant possible. So I would say that when we use plant-based techniques, we really focus on feeding the soil and the microorganism and to let themselves. So I think this is the best practice to have the best, more healthy food, because there is tons of different nutrients and compounds that the plant needs to grow and be really healthy. So, but it's hard to compare exactly with nutrients, especially because veganic is so new that we cannot compare really with other food.
But the technique that we're using in Saint-Casimir, Quebec, is called the Ruth Stout technique, which was developed by a woman named Ruth Stout a few decades ago. And it's essentially a technique of mulching with hay. So that's the primary thing that we use for fertility. I could even say the only thing that we use for fertility is we put large amounts of hay as a mulch, and the hay slowly decomposes, and it's eaten by the microorganisms, or rather broken down by the microorganisms into a form that's accessible to the plants. And so rather than taking the hay and passing it through a cow to create manure, we're putting the hay as a whole food for the microorganisms directly. And in that sense, we haven't even lost anything that may have been lost as it passes through an animal. We're giving basically a whole foods plant-based diet directly to the garden.
I love when people use that picture of bypassing the animal in order to achieve the end result,
mm-hmm.
be it creating food for our calories. We can eat those plants instead of inefficiently losing the calories through the animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's true, one of my real concerns is the soil, and I think we don't care enough for the soil, but it should be seen as a sanctuary where there is a whole web of life in the soil. And if we don't feed it, we kind of starve it, and it might just go away or die. So by really taking care of the soil, reducing the soil work, bringing good source of plant-based organic material, then we kind of feed a whole organism that will produce the food that we want to eat.
And that's one of the advantages, too, of the method we're using, where we're covering it with hay, is that we don't need to till the soil, because when we do rototilling and tilling, it basically disturbs the soil food web by bringing, you know, some organisms who would naturally live a few inches under the soil will be brought to the top and exposed to the heat and to the wind. And also, you know, the worms create tunnels and really improve the soil structure, so that's another thing that can be lost when we till. So it's the way that we're doing it in St. Casimir with the layer of hay. It's just a very, you know, slow process of the hay breaking down, and we put hay on once or twice a year in the spring and in the fall. And, you know, with that technique, the garden really takes care of itself. And we only visit about once a week or even once every 2 weeks. And there are some things like lettuce that we're not able to grow, you know, only visiting that often because they'll go to seed. But for most of the other plants, they'll really just take care of themselves and be self-sufficient even at a distance.
Now, do you think because it's a slower, more meticulous process, do you think the whole world could live on veganic agriculture? Could we feed the world that way?
But it's sure that the technique we are like experimenting or trying using in St. Casimir or in a garden would not necessarily work on a big, large-scale farm, because on large farm scale, people need most of the time to use tractors and machinery, so they would rather go on working the soil or at least cultivating a bit and using green manure, or they won't necessarily use mulch on a really large scale. So there is many, many different techniques that can be used to grow in a veganic way. And even ourselves are using different. We do some container gardening. We have an illegal allotment in the community garden. And so we try different techniques. I think the more natural, true one would be using mulch and just leaving the soil without disturbance. But maybe I think it's sure that we can grow. We could feed the world if we would use it on a large scale with machinery. It could be possible, especially because we don't need as much land if we have a vegan diet. And so I think it's possible to feed the world, but there is different techniques that we'll have to use.
All right. Well, I think I can't foresee the future, but what I see happening is more people are going to have to have gardens in order to grow a significant portion of their food. And especially here in the United States, we have lots of suburbia and a lot of green lawns that I think will need to change and turn into individual family gardens.
One of the techniques that has really interested me recently is a concept called forest gardening. It's very compatible with veganic. With forest gardening, it's sort of an imitation of a forest, because a forest is very self-sustaining in the sense that it creates its own mulch, its own ground cover. And I find that with farms and with family gardens, we often really focus on annual plants like tomatoes and lettuce. And with forest gardening, it focuses on the idea of planting perennials, so raspberry bushes, apple trees, and to essentially try to create a small forest and to do a reforestation project that's primarily with edible plants.
The nice
thing about this with the perennials is the roots go so deeply that they're able to draw up nutrients, from deep down in the ground. And over the years, it's a system that can become low maintenance as the perennial plants become established. So I'd say, you know, especially for people who live in a house that they intend to live in for, you know, quite a number of years, or that they intend to retire in, to think about planting fruit trees and perennial bushes could be a really fantastic way to, you know, ensure our future food security and also to eventually have a low-maintenance garden system.
So you're gardening in Quebec, and Are you growing enough food for you? Are you selling it? How much food are you growing?
We were trying to figure out what the square footage was a couple of days ago, though I don't know if we actually came up with a number. We're growing enough to keep us pretty well fed during the summer. Although, I mean, I think we're growing probably about 30 different varieties of plants, so certainly we still go to the farmer's market. We also have a market here called the Marché Solidarité, which is the solidarity market, where there's about 10 or 15 local farmers who sell their goods through kind of one central marketplace. And so we do supplement our diet with foods from other farms, for sure. We're gardening more to try out some of the techniques, to be able to talk to people about those techniques. Stefan's been expanding the garden a little bit each year. This year was the first year that we planted fruit trees.
Mm.
And, you know, there could be some possibility to move into it in a commercial way in the future, although it's about an hour outside of the city, so that's something that may be considered, but not quite for the moment.
Are there other farms, veganic farms, that are growing more food than just for an individual family?
Yeah, and if you go on our website, you will see lots of different farms that are commercial farms. We have farms that are doing CSA, so they have a box scheme where every week they will deliver a bag of lots of vegetables.
It's a veganic CSA?
Yeah.
There's one in New Paltz, New York. That actually feeds about 200 families.
Wow.
So it's really quite a large CSA, and he tries to keep his prices lower than the prices in the competing grocery stores.
Mm.
It's really quite a large project.
And this can be found on which website, the goveganic.net or the veggieculture?
Yeah, if you go to goveganic.net, and that farmer's website is flyingbeet.com.
What is it?
Flying Beet, so FlyingBeet.com.
Okay, that's an interesting image.
Yeah, and I mean, we know of probably about 5 other CSAs. I mean, we know of about 15 or 20 farms in total in North America that are farming veganically. In the newsletter American Vegan, there was an article about a year and a half ago about a farm in New Jersey. It is apparently the largest CSA in North America. I think it has 2,000 shares. And they were in the process of converting to veganic farming.
Oh, wow.
Or there is one also in New Mexico. And so there is different farms that are doing buckskin, but there are also farms that are growing cereals and grains, and these are also growing veganic using green manure, and so it's possible to grow vegetables, grains, so it's possible to have a complete diet just relying on veganic.
That's really fascinating and very encouraging, and I'm sure as more people hear about it, more ways to make it easier to do will come about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when we come across new farms, we try to write a profile and put it on our website, and sometimes people contact us and say, oh, I know that farm, or even just last week we got an email from a farm in New York State that are doing a small CSA, and so it's true that if people know other farms, we would like to get in touch with them, because it's nice to expand and see that there is people all around that are interested, and to show that it's possible to grow veganic.
Right. Well, as soon as you find one that's near New York City, please let me know.
I think the closest one I know to New York City is in the Catskills, which is a little bit far away.
Right. Okay. Now, is there anything else you want to add about veganic farming that we haven't covered before I move to another subject?
I guess maybe just to talk briefly about the certification programs that are becoming available.
Okay.
So in the UK, they have a certification called Stock-Free Organic, and basically over the course of several years, they consulted with, you know, dozens of people and put together several drafts to come up with standards for what it would mean to be a veganic farm. And they use the term stock-free organic because with terms like vegan organic or veganic, it sounds like a type of farming that's only made for vegans. And so they went with the term stock-free organic. And stock-free is basically to differentiate from farms with livestock. So it's a livestock-free farm. And in 2004, they I made a connection with a group called the Soil Association to start bringing this certification into practice. So Ian Tolhurst's farm in the UK was the first one to become stock-free organic. And just last year, we got our first stock-free organic farm here in North America, which is down in Florida. It's a place called Geneva Farm. It's called Victoria Farm, and it's in Geneva, Florida. And so it's actually non-commercial at the moment. They're actually just starting a small orchard, a small forest garden. But it's exciting to see that these things are being brought to the U.S. and to Canada. And then there's also a separate program that's being developed in the U.S. Called Certified Veganic. And that's basically, have you heard of Certified Naturally Grown before?
No.
Certified Naturally Grown, in a sense, is a response to USDA Organic, because with the conventional organic certification programs, it's very expensive for small farmers.
Right.
So it's hard for small farmers to get the certification, but at the same time, if they don't get it, it feels as if they're not legitimately growing organic food. So Certified Naturally Grown was developed as an alternative where essentially farmers certify other farmers.
Mm.
So a farmer will visit another farmer's farm and do a survey, and if they feel confident that this person is growing according to organic standards, they'll do a public declaration where, and it has a lot of transparency. I mean, the farmer will essentially put on the internet for everyone to see, you know, exactly what techniques they use, exactly what inputs they have on the farm, and then they'll sign it and date it. And then the person doing the certification will also, you know, attest to this in a transparent way. And so Certified Veganic is very similar to Certified Naturally Grown, that it's a farmer certifying other farmers for a very low administrative cost.
Transparency is good. And I think ultimately if we're going to survive as a species, cooperation is going to definitely be the secret. And so I like the idea of, at a grassroots level, the farmers evaluating each other in a cooperative fashion.
Yeah, and what I'd like to add is about the people that don't have access to a veganic farmer. Or I think more people should grow food and try to grow veganic food at home, even if they're just a small backyard or even a front yard or balcony. It's really accessible and it's easy to grow food. And the first thing I think people should do, even if they don't want to garden, is to start composting, because the food scrap that we send to the landfill are polluting, emitting gas and polluting the underground water. So if we compost our food scrap, at least we are reducing our environmental impact, and it produces really rich fertilizer that we can use for growing food. And that's, I think, a really first step that people should do to do their first step into veganic gardening.
Right. I agree with everything you're saying. I've got a small terrace on my apartment in New York City, and I grow whatever I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also done a bit of composting out there. But I think in the urban environments, I hate to say this, but it's something that the government's going to have to regulate. The individuals are not going to do it themselves. Unfortunately, there's a movement in the right direction, where in San Francisco they just require that everyone separate their compost with their trash, and so the city's picking it up and taking care of it.
Yeah.
And we're in a convenience culture, and so most people aren't going to do anything unless it's convenient.
Yeah.
But, okay. I still think we could make it all happen.
I think we can, too.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I really believe it. And, okay, so you're in Quebec. Are there any good vegan or vegetarian restaurants in Quebec?
In Montreal, there's certainly quite a number. In Montreal, there's about, I think, 15 or 20 of them. And the Montreal Vegetarian Association has a really nice guide for that. In Quebec City, we don't have a ton. We've got, I think, three different places. And my favorite place is actually, it's a health food store that has a little deli at the back that makes an amazing veggie burger.
Hmm. I've been in Toronto, and there are some really nice restaurants there that I remember. And I was in Montreal once, but I don't remember. I went to like one or two. Yeah. So is there are there some traditional foods in the Canadian or the French Canadian culture that are probably meat and dairy based that you might have discovered? I don't know if you're into preparing food other than growing it, but I always like I always like to end on a tasty moment, and so I like talking about interesting and delicious foods that are vegan.
One thing that it's a food that's very easy to veganize that I absolutely love, they have a dessert here called grand-père, which translates as grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's maple dumplings, and the only thing that's not vegan about it is it has butter in it, which is, you know, quite easy to replace. And so you can find recipes online for grand-père, but basically it's making a batter with flour, maybe a bit of baking soda and salt, and mixing in some margarine, like vegan margarine, some dairy alternative. And then at the same time, you have boiling maple syrup and water together. And then you take the batter by the spoonful and put it in this boiling syrup, and then cover the pot for 15 minutes. And when you come back, it's kind of like this gooey donut syrup.
Wow.
With these dumplings in the middle, and I think that's fantastic. I think Stefan has maybe a different favorite.
Yeah, I would say that my adaptation of a traditional dish is the poutine, which is just French fries. Usually it's French fries with cheese and gravy over it. So I kind of turned it into a vegan poutine where I use French fries, but I will cook them in the oven. And instead of using cheese, I just grate tofu, solid tofu, and I would boil it in salty water for maybe 5 minutes, and it changed the texture of the tofu, making it a more kind of really soft tofu, salty tofu. And then I make some gravy with maybe some flour, water, and tomato paste and spices, and pour it over the French fries, and it's a really good alternative for this typical Quebec dish, which is poutine.
Wow. Huh. That's interesting. I'm not familiar with that dish. I don't remember seeing a version of that in France. So
No,
that one's actually a genuinely Quebecois dish.
Yeah, I think so. I've never heard of it. Okay, that's pretty good. Now, do you know much about maple syrup and how it's produced?
Well, luckily we actually do have one vegan producer.
That was my question. Is there a vegan version? Because I understand that in order to stop the flow, often pig fat or butter is used.
Yeah, I think that's used in traditional, although I'm pretty sure it's not used in organic. But if you buy organic maple syrup, and it's done without the pig fat and without the formaldehyde. And we're lucky enough that there is one person here with a maple syrup farm who's vegan, and she actually puts out Quebec's vegan magazine, newsletter, which is called Ahimsa. And so one of the big differences between an organic maple syrup farm and a veganic one is that there wouldn't be any hunting allowed on the property. Typically, maple syrup farms would double also as hunting grounds. So with a vegan maple syrup farm, that's the one major difference.
Right. That's very good to know. Okay, so are you involved at all with trying to change some government regulations with farming? Do you get involved at all on that level?
We haven't gotten involved on that level yet. I mean, partly because we only started a year ago, so in many ways right now we're working on website development and getting in contact with farmers, and our main goal in many ways is to facilitate communication between people. I mean, there's a lot of isolated farmers around the continent who don't know any other veganic farmers, or people who are trying to garden, but, you know, every time they look for information on the internet, it's talking about, you know, chemical additives and chemical pesticides. So we're trying to get these people in contact so that they can really find solutions together and share information. In terms of being involved on a legislative level, I suppose perhaps that's eventually something that could come, although it's not necessarily one of our immediate goals.
Right.
One of our interests is to find more people or more farms or that are really good examples so that we can show that really there are these farms that are doing it on a large scale and that it's working and we can go towards these. And now we are getting in contact also with people more in the in schools or in people that are maybe scientists or that can bring these ideas, and maybe I would have an interest to push these forward in a more regulation area. But at this point we are trying to link people and to get more information about what's happening in North America compared to what's happening in Europe, for example.
And one thing I guess we should mention that we haven't mentioned yet is that, I mean, our organization started a year ago, but the organization in Europe actually started, I think it was in 1996. So in Europe, they've had a veganic presence for much longer, and it would certainly be worth checking out their website, which is www.veganorganic.net. And since they've been established longer, you know, they have information sheets that will give quite a bit of detail about the different techniques.
Vegan Organic
Magazine.
Excuse me?
Their magazine, it's published twice a year, and it's called Growing Green International. And it's a really good magazine to know all about what's happening in the different projects and around the world, different ideas that are coming up. And so that's a good publication if people would like to know more.
Okay. And one thing I didn't ask you before, but is there any difference in managing pests with veganic versus organic?
Yeah, I mean, one of the differences is the word pests isn't actually used too much when it comes to veganic farming. They'd often be called competing species because we're sort of competing in certain ways for the same head of lettuce. But I'll let just Stefan talk a little bit more about how it's dealt with.
First of all, I want to say I love competing species. It's, you know,
it's friendly competition,
that's
too.
That's right.
The first thing is also our ways to think, the way we see that, first is to try to have biodiversity and to create an ecosystem that will autoregulate as much as possible. And we try to avoid killing all animals, so instead we will try to focus on repellent or protecting crops, for example. Instead of putting an herbicide, maybe you could just put a fleece or a cloth over the crop so that it will prevent insects from laying their eggs. Instead of killing animals that could come with a bull defense, or it's really try to avoid killing animals and to prevention, also instead of trying to kind of counteract what's happening.
One of the things that makes larger farms or conventional farms rather more susceptible to pests is that they often use monocultures, and so it's a situation where if a pest, a competing species for that particular type of plant arrives, they can easily proliferate and kind of take over the entire field, whereas with veganic, you know, there's really a focus on, as Stefan was saying, on biodiversity, so that even if one plant does get lost, it's not necessarily a big deal if you're growing, you know, 50 or 60 different things.
Mm-hmm.
But there is different settings that farmers would do, like having hedges, having beetle banks where it could be flowers and different species that would attract beneficial insects, having ponds or water points where we could attract toads, frogs, and maybe grass snakes, or all these animals that would be free in the land, and that will help to maintain an equilibrium in the different microorganisms or insects that are in the field.
This has really been very, very interesting, and I really am very grateful that you are doing what you're doing, and you're doing the work so that the rest of us ultimately can benefit from it, because it may not be that obvious right now, but I think in the very near future, we're going to realize that veganic agriculture is really important, especially when we start realizing the effect of all the toxic contaminants in our food system, and when we make a big effort to avoid them, not just by not using pesticides and chemical-based fertilizers, but to avoid all the concentrated toxins that are in factory farmed animals' manure or in organic farmed manure. That, do you know, just one really quick question, the manure that exists now, I mean, there are mountains of them near factory farms. Do you know what we can do with that? Because it's just so toxic.
It's a good question. I mean, I think in many ways, you know, our hope is that people will move more toward a plant-based diet. I mean, I know some people say that in terms of eating meat. They'll say, well, there's already all of this meat in the grocery store. If we don't eat it, it's going to go to waste. And I feel in a lot of ways it's the same thing with the manure, that it's not a matter of figuring out what to do with it. It's a matter of figuring out how to reduce it and move in a better direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much. This has really been a pleasure speaking with you. And I wish you all
thank
the best.
You for inviting us.
Yeah, and I'm now going to start looking for some food that's from a veganic farm.
Yeah.
There is in Ithaca, in fact, there is in the farmer's market, there is a farmer that is selling veganic produce, and they are even certified veganic now since this year.
That's great. Okay, well, check out their websites at goveganic.net and vegiculture.net. Thank you, Stefan Grolo and Megan Kelly.
Thank you.
And I'm Karen Hartglask. This has been It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me.